very glad that we have been able to purchase this assisted listening device system. I think it'll be very helpful to many of our members, and I hope we can spread the word about that a little bit. And as with everything, there'll always be a little bit of time of adjustment, and we would want, if you're one that's wanting to use it, we would like feedback on what kind of ear phone system you would like, the headset you would actually like, and what would be most comfortable for you. And the nice thing is your wireless pack will actually have a volume knob. So it's one of those things where I suppose if you don't like what I'm saying, you can just turn it off and you won't have to hear me at all, right? But I joke, I'm lightening the humor a little bit, lightening this up with the little humor this morning. But no, seriously, you can adjust it. So it's not set at one level where if it's too loud, you can't use it, or where it's too soft, you can't use it. It'll be something where you can adjust to your own needs. And I think that'll be very, very helpful. Now let me take just a moment, then we're going to get into the sermon, but let me take just a moment then to encourage our men who are leaders to try your best to speak into the microphone, because I will tell you, this system will not work at all if you don't actually speak into the microphone, because that's what it's actually sending back. The signal has to come through that mic up into our sound booth and then go out from there. So just to kind of give a silly illustration, but if I walk way over here by where my dad's sitting and I try to lead a prayer, it's not going to help anybody at all. And I think you understand what I mean by that. So try to step over in front of the mic, or on this, if you're up here, it's a little bit over to the left here that the microphone is up here, so that it will actually broadcast to those that are using the system. So, but hopefully that will be helpful to many of our members. And we won't have to crank the system up where it's too loud in here to attain that ability. You know, it's good to transitioning now into the sermon. It's really good for us to focus on the good things of God, on the godly things. I recently was talking to a friend, and he asked, "How much time do you spend worrying and thinking about all the evils and the ways in which people often mistreat one another and do things that are hurtful to their fellow man, and kind of, I guess, in a sense, the biggest concerns of what are going on that are ungodly, maybe in our culture?" So they're just kind of asking me how much I stay up to date with those types of things, how much I read and focus on those things. And I said, I was trying to be honest. I said, to a degree, I do. I mean, being aware of what's going on is good, certainly. Being able to then hopefully communicate in a way that would help those individuals see God's truth is certainly, it's helpful in that regard. But I don't really dwell much on that. And the reason I don't dwell much on it is I prefer to think that if we present what is good and holy and people follow that, they will in turn see what is not good and reject. At least that's the hope. And there is a little bit, just a little bit, of a concern if someone becomes overly interested in something that is dark. Okay? I mean, I've known people who have become very, very interested in learning about maybe the occult or paranormal type things or demonic type things. And they become obsessed with that. And actually, it can kind of draw you into a dark place if you're not careful. Maybe better is to do what Paul wrote to the church at Philippi. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Or to notice the psalm, turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way. So what I'm saying here is, no, I don't have a fascination with darkness. It's not something that intrigues me, that gets me pumping, that makes me think, oh, there's where I want to spend my time. I want to dwell in learning about all of that. I want to spend my time learning about God's goodness, learning about holiness, learning what it means to love my neighbor more fully and more truly. You see what I'm saying? There is a tendency, if we're not careful, to pick those paths in the wrong ways. And I would suggest we stay focused on the good things. Living the new life is about embracing that newness that God it means for us to live. It's about us desiring to grow in it more and more. Part of that is certainly recognizing and rejecting things, but also a greater part of that is embracing and doing that which is good. And I hope that you live the new life to the best of your ability. And we recognize that it is a struggle, and we've been recognizing that it was a struggle for the early church. In particular, we've used the letter to the church at Corinth that is referred to as 1 Corinthians. And we have looked through at some of the problems that they were having. A lot of their problems stemming from their background, of what they had come to expect or think was wise and where wisdom and knowledge came from. And generally they thought of it as coming from man, some good learner, some good person who had a great ability to think in philosophy and those types of things and had a school of thought, maybe had been taught to them and they were continuing on in that school of thought. Again, I say the Socrates, the Platos, and Aristotle type people of the history of the world, people who really arose up and were seen as being unique and intelligent. But that the church at Corinth had wrongly applied those types of principles and understanding to their new existence, their new life as members of God's family, was a sad thing for Paul. And he warned them about it. Don't put your trust so much in men, in the wisdom of men. Stop following after people, not even me, not even Peter, not even Apollos. Don't do that. Recognize that you are followers of Jesus Christ. And that any foundation that you try to build something on spiritually, you try to have as the cornerstone, as the central part, as the most important element. Many analogies I guess we could use there. That all of that is built upon and must be built upon Jesus Christ. I think about what it would be like to build a very, very beautiful new home. Build the dream house. Think of all the amenities that you would want, all the upgrades, all the finest materials used, not going to use the cheap materials that will be covered up by the sheetrock and paint, right? I mean that behind it is a very solid, wonderfully built structure. That you put the time and effort into designing it to where all the rooms, after it's built, all the rooms are exactly what you wanted. They actually met your wildest dreams of a perfect home. And if any of you have ever built a home, been a part of building a home for yourself, you probably know that a lot of times in designing a home and coming up with a custom home I'm talking about, if you move in and you live there a while, you start figuring out that's not exactly what you wanted after all. You made some little blunders along the way. You didn't anticipate some things. But this house isn't like that. what sense would it make if you moved into this home and it was that dream home and you put that much effort and that much money and everything into it? What sense would it make if you then began to just trash it out? I'm talking trash it out. I'm not talking about that I just go a few weeks without vacuuming or dusting. I mean that you just decide that when you're done with something and it's trash, it doesn't need to go in the trash can. That's what a floor is for. And when I'm going away for 2 or 3 days or 4 or 5 days, I don't need to worry about someone taking care of my dogs. That's what my house is for, and I lock them up in there. And you may think, who in the world would do that? Well, not to tell a terrible story, but I've known of a situation in which I had to deal with a problem because somebody did that. Why would we destroy something so beautiful, so well made, so thoughtful? Why would we tear it apart and trash it? Why would we have a brand new fence built around our yard, a nice, expensive privacy fence built around our yard, and then start knocking pickets out and leaving huge holes all throughout so we could just, I guess, step in, come and go through our backyard, through the fence? Can't imagine that happening, right? At one point, I could have taken you and told you about a house where that is exactly what happened. A brand new fence was built. And just a few months later, it still looked like a new fence. And you know, after a while, pickets begin to turn colors because wood rots, by the way. But they had already tore it up. And who would destroy God's temple? What kind of person or group of people would come to the temple of God and just tear it apart, desecrate it, act like it meant nothing? That's what unbelievers did. That's what pagans did to the temple of old. No respect whatsoever for what was God's. But believers? Why would believers ever do that? And yet in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, there is a warning going out to the church that they need to be careful about God's holy temple. According to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, Paul writes. I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. I have had a task placed in my hands by God, and I have done what the Lord desired. I have preached the gospel of Jesus Christ, and others have come along, Apollos even, and it has been one to build on top of. There is a work to be done, and the work is important, and there is a need to be concerned and careful with how we build, and to recognize that it is something worthy of serious consideration. Take heed how one builds. Not to be haphazard, not to be clumsy, not to be running around just trying to figure it out on the fly. It's not time to begin to change things up and think of a new design, come up with our own design of the way it's going to be. Because in this situation, the greatest architect, the greatest drawer of a blueprint, has provided the desired house and provided the materials, the right materials, to keep with the analogy. And provided opportunity for the right builders to be placed in a situation where they can accomplish it. But they need to be careful. They need to make sure that they do it right. And he says, as he continues on, they need to make sure that they don't miss the importance of the foundation. No other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Any other spiritual house, any other would-be temple of God that does not understand and establish itself upon this foundation, Jesus Christ as Lord, is not going to stand. It will not remain. Why? Because the foundation isn't solid. We think of the song, right? We sing during Vacation Bible School, building our house upon the rock, not upon the sand. The only one that will withstand all of what Satan will throw their way, all the storms of life, the only way it's going to stand and be firm is if it is built upon Jesus Christ. So be careful how you build. Be careful upon what you build. And recognize what's being built or has been built was built by God. It is His church. It belongs to Jesus, the Father. It belongs to them. It belongs not to us. And yet we are a part of that which is holy. Do you not know that you are the temple of God? Do you not know that? He questions them because their actions seem to imply that they're confused about who they are. Their divisiveness is not in accordance with God's will. Proverbs 6 is probably very familiar to most of us. There are six things the Lord hates, right? Seven that are an abomination to Him. And one being this: one who sows discord among the brothers. But notice also in verse 14 of Proverbs 6, it says, with perverted hearts they devise evil, continually sowing discord. Continually. Because their hearts are not right. Their thoughts are not right with God's way and will. And in some way, the church at Corinth, and they are the church, but at the same time, they are in need of correction. They are in need of discipline. They are in need of changing and repenting of some things. One of which is that their attitudes and their divisiveness is causing problems that is destroying God's temple. It is desecrating God's temple. But the temple isn't any longer this place, this building that is in Jerusalem, this temple now is the very believers, the very church that they are a part of. That the Spirit of God dwells in you. And if anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. We know what we need to build upon. Foundation is Jesus Christ. And when that foundation is laid, and when people come in faith and are a part of that house of God, that building that is God's building, and they become fellow workers together, again, the language of 1 Corinthians chapter 3, there is a unity that is expected, a care and concern for one another, an appreciation for one another in the things that we are similar in, but also in the ways that we might be uniquely different. The abilities and opportunities, the personalities to an extent, which sometimes, very differing personalities, let's be honest, sometimes that is hard, right? There are some people who are much more outgoing. Some people are much more subdued. Some people have a natural ability to kind of speak things openly, while others are reserved. Some people are quick in making decisions. Other people, you wonder, will they ever come to a decision, right? Cautiousness. All of those things left to themselves either leads one person, let's just use that illustration, the person who's always going and doing quickly is always going to be getting something done. And occasionally they're going to be getting the right things done. The person who's super cautious may in fact have a really good idea of what ought to be done because they've thought it through. But left to themselves, they may never actually accomplish anything. But you put those two people together, if they will work in harmony, if they will notice their differences not as something to despise, but to appreciate, put those two people together, and you have someone who really thinks things through and another person who knows how to take off and run with it. Or you can say, well, I'm going to only talk to and only appreciate the people who are cautious like me. And this group goes over and says, well, I don't know what their problem is. All they ever do is sit there and think, at least we do something. Yeah, we've messed up a bunch of times, but at least we do something. And all of a sudden you have a divided church that is not looking at one another and saying, you have something to offer that makes us better. And I think that's what we need to look at. Don't destroy the church. Don't treat it as though it's not precious and holy. Don't be that kind of divisive. Don't be pulling things in the wrong directions and following after the wrong leaders and not following after the one from whom we all owe our allegiance to. There is one Lord. And that one Lord, you ready for it? That one Lord is not me. That one Lord is not Bill McConnell or Doug Welch. That one Lord is none of you. We all have one Lord. That one Lord is Jesus Christ. If we build upon that, we can't help but do good things for the sake of the kingdom. If we keep that as focus, we can't help but find ways in which, even when we have little disagreements, that we will get through them together. Why? Because the church is holy. God's temple is holy. It is worth every effort that we have to make to hold together, to love one another more, and to focus on those good things that God wants us to focus upon. Oh, I appreciate the church at Corinth. They were doing a lot of good, no doubt. But there are some ways in which I don't want to be anything like them. You know what I mean? That's the truth. I wonder what God would write to us, the church at North Heights, right? Sometimes we might be glad to read those words, and sometimes we might be challenged to read those words. But here we get in on a little insight. And so we learn. We learn from our brothers and sisters, from the good things they did and from the mistakes they were making. Embrace the things they were doing that was right. Watch out for the things that they were doing that was wrong. Something is similar to that in our midst. We need to either elevate it if it's the good, or we need to eliminate it if it's the bad. Never forget how important the church is. Don't destroy it. Who would do that? Outsiders are trying to do that, right? Unbelievers, skeptics, atheists, all kinds of people, other world religions, perhaps we can throw in that as well. Don't appreciate, don't like, don't want to hear anything that Christianity has to offer. Satan, he wants it destroyed. He'll do whatever he can to convince people, both inside and outside of the church, to help him. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be on his team. I don't want to be the one that lets him use me to somehow hurt the church. Sometimes it happens. Fess up to those times. Fess up to it. Confess your sins, if need be, one to another, and say, I am so sorry for that. I really am. That's not who I want to be. And we move forward together in harmony. It's that important. The temple of God is holy. And you are a part of that as believers. You were baptized into Christ. You put on Christ. You were added to the body of Christ, to the church. You became a part of that great temple. Cautiousness as you move forward. Don't be deceived. Don't let yourself be deceived by the deceiver himself, the one that wants to get you off track and make you think something that is not true is true. Don't listen to the wisdom of this world in this age. Listen to the wisdom of God. The wisdom of this world is foolishness. God catches the wise in their own craftiness. God knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are futile. But God's truth is not futile. Therefore, let no one boast in men. Don't boast in men. Recognize who you belong to. You are Christ's. You're not Paul's. You're not Cephas's. You're not Apollos's. You're not Alexander Campbell's. You're Christ's. Be committed and loyal to Him. And look around in this room. Because that person sitting next to you and behind you and in front of you, they are Christ's. You put those two together. If you're Christ, you belong to Christ, and they belong to Christ, then we're together in this. Don't let the outside world get you distracted and deceive you from that. Live the new life. Live it wholly. Give it all your energy. Make correction when correction is needed. And never, ever stop doing your best for God. If you need to respond this morning, we're going to stand together and sing the invitation song that has been picked out, number 653. We'd love to pray with you or help you in any way in your spiritual walk. Will you come as we stand and sing?